My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Mayfield looks left all the way. Single coverage, one-on-one. Oh, what a catch! Mike Evans fighting through Benjamin St. Just for a 17-yard touchdown. First and goal from the 4. Mayfield to the end zone. Godwin stretches it across for the touchdown. Mayfield with pressure up the middle, floating it out. He's got him wide open. It's Jalen McMillan. His first catch, his first touchdown. The rookie on the board from 32 yards out. Mayfield to the air, to the end zone, to Evans for the touchdown.
Baker Mayfield's 4 touchdown passes yesterday, the most on opening day against Washington in 25 years. Most of us remember that Troy Aikman threw 5 against Washington in 1999, part of the 21-point comeback Rocket Ishmael game. We didn't have that kind of drama yesterday. Yesterday was a bit more lopsided. Good morning. Washington's opener in Tampa did not go well. That would be the understatement of the day. A 37-20 loss that was one-sided across the board. But especially when it came to Tampa's offense versus Washington's defense. That part of the game can only be described as an all-encompassing beatdown. I mean, it started early, it got worse in the middle, and by the end it was almost unfair. You know, Tampa's offense had much better players than Washington did on defense, and the Bucs coaches seemed much more prepared than Dan Quinn and his staff were. More than any other thing that happened in the opening game yesterday, Washington's defense was the most significant culprit in the game. The number one reason they got dismantled the way they did in the season opener. Now, I promise you that almost everything I say over the next 3 hours about the game yesterday is and will be, for the most part, just about the game yesterday. One game. You know, there's no chance you're going to hear me give you any far-reaching conclusions about this team after one game. I said it last week, the week before that, the week before that. You are a fool if you make 1 week in the NFL, especially week one, a referendum on anything. Week one is the biggest head fake week of the season. You know, let's not forget that old Riverboat Ron, he went 3-1 in season openers. How'd that work out for him? But especially, you know, when you're talking about teams that are completely new, you know, after an offseason makeover, Washington has much more, if not the most, new of any team in the league. You can't read that much into week one. You can't read that much into weeks two through four, two through five, six, either. This league and the teams in it change so dramatically week to week, especially, as I said, when you're a brand new team, which Washington is. You know, Dan Quinn said something after the game that I think was an understanding of yesterday's result and probably the results to come early in the season. I want you to hear this part of his introductory remarks after the game.
You need the struggle to see the identity develop. You don't want it, but you do need it. And that part, you know, is hard, and that struggle happened tonight. And so,
yeah, it did. You know, he said something, Denton, similar a few weeks ago when he was on with us. And I asked him, you know, can you really learn anything about your team before you start playing real games? You know, and he said something to the effect of, no, what you learn is whether or not you're putting together the right kind of habits, or you have the kind of work habits where, you know, you want them to start to establish an identity. And he thought that they were making great progress. But I wonder, though, if the identity that he talked about, that Adam Peters talked about so much throughout the offseason and preseason, playing fast, playing physically, competing until the end, I wonder if he was a bit disappointed with some of that, you know, especially on defense yesterday. You know, I talked about something on the show a few weeks back. And it was brief, and it was a reference to kind of a phrase they had been using since they were hired. And it was in reference to what I really, the way I deemed it to be, a very optimistic offseason and preseason view from Dan Quinn and even Adam Peters when he got the chance to speak. Every chance we got, we heard about, you know, the solid progress, the special sauce, which is the phrase they use no less than a half dozen times during the offseason, the special sauce that they believed that they had gotten right. And that was their way of describing the type of players they brought in. And, you know, the way they, the coaches, were going to put them in places to succeed. You know, and I mentioned and I tweeted it out yesterday that it just was kind of bugging me during the game yesterday. It's my two cents here. I'd talk less about identity and secret sauce and show us those things instead. And then we can heap praise on the team for those things. It's not, by the way, anything like previous regimes. I'm not saying that at all. I really like this group so far. Benefit of the doubt, Kev. In full effect. I like Dan Quinn, and I really believe that it will all play out much better than the way it started yesterday. But he knew and said in that quote, you need to struggle to see the identity develop. Knowing that some struggles were coming, I would have made it a point to talk less about that identity and the progress that they had made publicly. Just my opinion. I go back to the Godfather. I go back to Joe Jackson Gibbs when it comes to this stuff. He never told us anything that was going well. I mean, nothing was ever going well when he was in front of a mic. And I know today's media responsibilities are totally different. I get that. But you would have thought listening to Gibbs in the offseason and in the preseason and then in the week leading up to a game that his team had no chance. Now, he wasn't that way behind closed doors, but there was no way he was going to promise anything great. You know, and by the way, that's not what Quinn did. I'm not suggesting that's what he did. Gibbs's total focus was always on showing us, you know, over-delivering on game day. And then letting us talk about his team in very optimistic ways. Again, small nit to pick. He and AP and DQ are far from what we've had around here over the last 25 years. Nothing comparable. I'm not suggesting that at all. But none of the talk about anything over the last 7 to 8 months really meant anything until yesterday. You know, you are judged on games that start in September and hopefully run through late January and beyond. But he told you with that quote, it's going to take some time. Yesterday wasn't necessarily a wake-up call for them as much as it was a bit of a current reality check on their identity development. But again, you know, and I'm going to beat this dead horse today. It's one game, and it's the first game. So almost all of the conversation today about yesterday's game, for me anyway, will be about yesterday's game as a standalone entity. And no, I'm not changing my 10-7 prediction after one game. 2 to 3 more games like yesterday, we'll talk. I'll get to my game take, highlighting a few things, very few things, that I liked, and a lot more that I didn't like in a few minutes. But let me begin with my top takeaway from yesterday. My top takeaway from that blowout 37-20, 17-point loss in the season opener is that the defense was an absolute train wreck. I was shocked, honestly, at how bad it was. It could have easily been a game from last year. The team overall was bad. They were outmanned, they were outplayed, they were outcoached. But I was really disappointed and very surprised, honestly, at how bad the defense was in that game. I really thought, and I still do think, I'm not changing my mind after one game. I really thought, and I do think, that Dan Quinn, a defensive head coach, along with Joe Witt Jr. and the staff they've put together on defense, combined with some veteran players and some familiar players with the coaches and the schemes that they brought in, I think it will make a big difference. I just thought it would make a big difference right away. And right away might mean next week or the week after. I thought the bigger mystery would be the offense. And it would likely have ups and downs, and that might take a while. But it looks like the defense is in the same boat, if not a boat right now with more holes in it. But again, one game. I just thought there was a decent chance we'd see defensive improvement quickly. And again, we still might, you know, starting next week, the week after. But don't mistake yesterday as being a truly awful defensive performance, a mirror of what we saw last year. You know, not only will I emphasize that it was just one game and that this conversation is just one game, I would add to that that it is totally fair to acknowledge that Tampa Bay, overall roster-wise, was not only better, but came back nearly in full from the playoff team they had last year. And on offense in particular, they brought all of their best players back, including Mike Evans. I mean, 13, he's elite. 13 on their team, not our team. Washington doesn't have anybody as good as Evans, and they certainly don't have anybody on defense capable of matching up against him. Chris Godwin, another matchup nightmare for a team like Washington. And then they've got the rookie McMillan. They've got White out of the backfield. He's a weapon, too. They've got the kid number 10, Trey Palmer. It's not an exaggeration to say that Tampa's receiving core overall, including backs, top five-ish in the league. It was a mismatch. Evans and Godwin were targeted by Baker Mayfield a total of 14 times in the game. They had 13 catches and 3 touchdowns on those 14 targets. They were completely uncheckable throughout. Forget about the personnel matchups. Then you throw on to it the confusion that there was in the secondary. And perhaps even, you know, on the sideline and up front, it was a mess. Now, Washington's not going to be the only team that struggles to cover Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They're really good. And Mayfield, by the way, yesterday, outstanding, coming off the best year of his career last year. With that said, you know, the opponent being good and giving them some credit, Washington's defense put up Zero fight. The Buccaneers scored points on their first five possessions of the game and seven of their eight total possessions in the game. They scored points on seven of eight possessions in a game. They only had the ball eight times, and they moved the ball on seven of them and scored points. That does not happen much in the NFL. That's a college thing, not an NFL thing. And what made it super impressive was that on the seven of eight drives where they scored points, none of those drives started because of a turnover, you know, with a super short field or a big kickoff or punt return and a, you know, corresponding super short field. Scoring on seven of eight drives in a game is pretty much checkmate. You just don't have much of a chance if your defense allows seven scores on eight drives. They converted officially, if you look at the stat book, 9 of 13 on third down. I say officially because they also had two more third down conversions due to Washington penalties. But third down conversions on penalties aren't included in the third down conversion team stat, you know, but netting it out, they basically stayed on the field after third down 11 out of 15 times. The other four times, they kicked three field goals and they punted once. They threw it wherever they wanted to. They threw it at whomever they wanted to. And then in the second half, they ran it however they wanted to. You know, if not for a bunch of penalties and an early dropped pass and an early overthrown pass by Mayfield, it would have been much worse. 37 points on offense on basically 60 offensive snaps if you exclude the last two kneel downs. That, boys and girls, is domination. Tampa's offense, really good. They deserve a ton of credit. They have good players. They were schemed up well. They went after Washington's clear weaknesses, which we knew coming in with some of the personnel they would have out there in coverage. But man, if I didn't know better, I would have thought I was watching last year's defense. But it's just one game. And I am reminding myself as we go along that it was just one game. Washington had 11 new players out there on defense against a pretty solid team. Next week's opponent, the Giants, should be different. Much different. They shouldn't be, I hope not, anywhere near as productive as Tampa was on offense. But for me, the top takeaway from yesterday was an incredibly disappointing opener by the defense. All right, my game take coming up in a few minutes, but I want to get to a what do you got here in the opening segment.
Just completed the Olympics. Cincinnati came in here wanting this to be sprint races. Didn't get it.
A new era in New England starts with an upset win. Gerard Mayo, in his head coaching debut, gets the victory in Cincinnati.
You gotta love the NFL, man. It is the best reality show there is. It is so unpredictable. But really, the fact that it's so unpredictable should make it predictable. The biggest underdog on the week one slate was New England getting 7.5 to 8 points in Cincinnati yesterday. Out in Vegas, the Circa Sportsbook has the biggest survivor pool in the country. The team picked to win in week one, the one that everybody thought was so easy, was Cincinnati. By the way, a survivor pool does not include point spreads. You just have to pick a winner each week, and then you survive until the next week if the team you pick to win the game wins the game. If they lose the game, you're out. Yesterday, that Circa Sportsbook survivor pool saw 34% of the pool eliminated after 1 week, Denton. 34% of the pool had Cincinnati over New England, and Jacoby Brissett ruined it for all of those people. Brissett was the quarterback yesterday for New England, if you didn't know, and they pulled off a 16-10 upset. By the way, Burrow was out there. You know, he's not hurt. Ja'Marr Chase actually played yesterday. More than a third of the pool, though, gone after week one after picking Cincinnati. Denton, Super Bowl winner. Just one game, Denton. Relax. Relax. The Bengals are still going to be a good team. By the way, the second biggest favorite on the board yesterday was Buffalo. They were 6.5-point favorites over the Cardinals. They were the team that was the second most picked team in survivor pools across the country, but in the biggest one at the Circa. They did win, but barely. They were down 14 late in the first half, and they held on for dear life at the end to win 34-28 by 6. If Arizona had won that game, another 12% of the Circa survivor pool would have been gone. You would have been approaching half the pool gone after week one. The NFL, the best reality show there is. I mean, mostly, again, due to the fact that it's almost impossible to predict. College football, you know, isn't nearly what the NFL is. But how about Northern Illinois Saturday in South Bend as a 28-point underdog knocking off the Irish? That was awesome. Denton will have his college football weekend wrap on tomorrow's show. Mondays are about Washington and the NFL. So with that, when we come back, we will get to my game take. What I liked from yesterday, and while not much about what there was to like, there were, I thought, a few things to be encouraged by. What I didn't like, lots. And, you know, the defense, by the way, wasn't the only problem. There were a few other problems as well. And a few other observations from the 37-20 season opening loss in Tampa Bay. We'll get to that and a lot more today. Your chance to weigh in will come later on in the hour. So if you want to start lining up on the phones, you can start doing it in about 15 or 20 minutes at 301-230-0980. My game take when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I
feel like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Kevin's Take. The good, the bad, and the ugly from yesterday's Washington Commanders game.
Let's go! Let's go!
Here's Kevin.
Back at it. Daniels with the keep and his first touchdown in the National Football League. Jaden Daniels runs it in from 2 yards out for the touchdown.
All right, my game take is what I liked from the game, what I didn't like, and several other observations from the week one 37-20 loss to Tampa. So, look, Daniels' first NFL game wasn't that bad, really. In fact, it was a bit similar to some of his games at LSU last year, where the only chance his team had was for him to do his best by strapping the team to his back because their defense was so god-awful. LSU's defense last year, we talked about it all off-season, was one of the worst in the country. Jaden had to be Superman for his team to even have a chance in most of those games. And yesterday, he must have looked out there and had some eerie flashbacks to a year ago. Let's get started with the things that I liked. And I'm going to start with Daniels. Daniels, after his first game, is on the list of things that I liked. You know, it could have been better, for sure, but we are searching for breadcrumbs after a day like yesterday. So let's say some nice things about the rookie quarterback in his first NFL game. So the first thing, of course, is his ability to make a nothing play or a potential bad play into a good play because of his legs. You know, he's so poised. He's so calm. There's nothing about yesterday that seemed to have him rattled. He seemed totally up for the day. Yeah, there was that first throw. We'll get to that. But he's a bit of a cheat code because of his ability to create off schedule with not just his speed, but there's quickness, there's vision, there's an innate, you know, kind of innate feel to get away from defenders. You know, he is elite at that. He was in college, and in his very first NFL game, he proved to be an elite, ground yardage gainer as a scrambler and in other ways as well. He ran early. He ran often. I'm sure the tape's going to show that he did not have to run as much as he did. I thought he went a bit too early on a couple of occasions. Ertz in particular looked like a primary read, at least on one play, if not two. And Jaden, for whatever reason, didn't get to him and instead, you know, took off, went off schedule, I thought, too quickly. His start was rough. That swing pass to Robinson Jr. was inaccurate, went backwards, which derailed the opening drive completely. He was lucky the ball got out of bounds and wasn't recovered by Tampa. It could have been even more disastrous. But the fun started on his second drive. You know, he scrambled twice on that drive for 26 yards. Unfortunately, I think that third and three before the field goal attempt, I think, you know, Zacchaeus actually was open enough and it was not a great throw, so they had to kick a field goal. He scrambled for another 28 yards on the third drive. By the way, they only had the ball three times in the first half. They could have had it a fourth time, actually. We'll get to that when we talk about some of the clock handling at the end of the first half on the list of things I did not like. But, you know, on the three drives in the first half, they drove it on two of them. They missed a field goal. They scored a touchdown on the other. He rushed 16 times in total in the game. That's a lot. My preference, honestly, would have been that he wasn't in the game at the end taking hits. I know we want them to compete until the end, and that's the kind of kid he is, but that game was 37-14, and he was still out there running zone read keepers and getting hit and having his helmet knocked off. By the way, can we get a helmet tightened a little bit for him so it doesn't get knocked off so easily? It actually cost him a touchdown on the helmet getting knocked off at the end because the play was ruled dead once that happened, and he had not yet crossed the goal line, which he did after the helmet came off. I want him competing his ass off when he's out there, even until the end, and I want him to want to be out there, but I'm not sure he needed to be out there, and that's the coach's job to pull him from a game like that. You know, it's one thing if you're going to stay in the game and hand the ball off and throw it a little bit, but he was still out there running and taking some hits that I think are just unnecessary for him in his first game where your team's getting clobbered. I thought overall he had some excellent throws, some quick release throws to Ertz, some check down throws to Robinson and Eckler. Maybe some of them were in progression and not necessarily check downs, but early progression throws. I thought there were a couple of times, as I mentioned, that he bailed too quickly. The sack where he fumbled and Biotis recovered, I thought there was a chance to hit Ertz before he got hit. You know, this is where some of those advanced people will tell you pressure to sack percentage, you know, that ball should have been out. And I think they'd probably be right about that. He missed the deep ball to Terry. That would have kept them in the ball game. That's 16-14, you know, on the first play of the third quarter. And look, he was one of the best deep ball throwers in the country last year. I promise you, he is going to make a lot of those throws. It's too bad he didn't make that one because Terry was open and it was six if he hits him in stride, and he certainly had time to do it. He scrambled a bunch. He ran it on read option plays. He ran it on designed runs, including a quarterback draw, including a naked boot for a first down on a play that actually looked like it was going to be called back. But Trent Scott actually did report as eligible on that play, and Dan Quinn made a big stink of it on the sideline, which forced the referees to huddle back up, and they talked about it, and Trent Scott actually did a report, so he wasn't eligible there. He ran a lot, he took some shots, but for the most part, I thought he did a very effective job of getting down, albeit by not sliding. By the way, he did slide in college, trust me. But he's more comfortable doing it the way he did it yesterday, kind of more falling forward and going down. And you know what? I actually kind of like that better. I think it avoids that big hit to the head where you're on your back when you go into a slide and you're perhaps a little bit more exposed. Overall, you know, 16 rushes for 88 yards on the ground, the most ever for a quarterback on opening day. There were a bunch of stats there yesterday about quarterbacks and rushing on opening day, and he was up there, if not at the top of quarterback rushing statistics for a first game. He was 17 of 24 for 184 yards passing. No touchdowns, no picks. Much of the passing yardage, really, to be, you know, fair, came on the final two drives. You know, I think 80 plus of the yards came on the final two drives when they were, you know, getting their ass kicked and they were facing soft coverage and they were facing some reserve players. But overall, I mean, I don't know how you couldn't watch, you know, this guy in his very first game and come away encouraged. He is going to be an elite playmaking off-schedule quarterback. You know, you'll see, too, as he gets more comfortable and maybe as they play some teams that aren't a little bit more prepared than Washington was, I think. I don't know, and I have not watched the All-22, and I'll have more on this tomorrow, sort of upon further review. But I don't know that people were open all day. I don't know that there was a lot of separation all day. I mean, I don't want to go back to this, but I mean, those of you that said they don't need Brandon Ayuk, you had to be smoking something or gummying it up to not think that they needed another big-time receiver this year. But if your take was, we don't need him now because we're not going to be very good now, and, you know, we can get that in the draft later, and I don't want to spend the money, or I don't like his personality or whatever, that's fine. All of that's reasonable. But I think that, you know, some of the things that we talked about over the summer in terms of the need for another playmaker or two at wide receiver, I think that's one of those things we will start to realize. Again, just one game, and maybe De'Ami Brown and Luke McCaffrey and Noah Brown, who was inactive, will be good supporting receivers for Terry McLaurin. But overall, I'd give Jaden Daniels in his first game a solid B grade. I mean, I mean, it's mesmerizing to watch him work off schedule and to just, you know, there's a style to it that he has also. And again, if you watched him in college, this was not a surprise, his running ability and his ability to make people miss and his ability to basically, you know, kind of smile at anybody trying to run him down. That's going to be a part of what they're going to need all year, especially if they're not, if their supporting players offensively at the skill spots aren't good enough, you know, beyond, say, Terry McLaurin. Also on the things that I liked list. So I said as my bold prediction before the year started that I thought Brian Robinson Jr. was going to rush for 1,200 plus yards. He was going to have 50 plus catches. He was going to have double digit plus touchdowns, and he was going to be in the Pro Bowl. Certainly the statistics from week one would not have him heading in that direction. But I like Brian Robinson Jr., man. There wasn't a lot of running room in the first half. A little bit more in the second. 12 carries, 40 yards is nothing to write home about. Clearly, 3.3 yards per carry. He had three catches for 49, including that big one, that 32-yarder in the first half. I just think Brian Robinson Jr. is a player, and I think he's a versatile player. We know that after watching him last year, that he can also catch the football. A lot of the empty set stuff, he was out as a wide receiver. I also thought that Austin Ekeler looked really good in his first game in Washington. Four catches, 52 yards, some of it coming at the end. Two carries, 10 yards. But Ekeler looked like Austin Ekeler with the ball in his hands, making people miss. He's a very... he has that kind of slight wiggle, that slight shoulder turn. He's really able to make people miss in tight spaces. I thought Ekeler was really solid yesterday. I think Zach Ertz is going to be a big part of their production on offense, you know, when they're in competitive games, when they get a chance to get the ball more than three times in a half. And I thought he was solid out there. Luke McCaffrey, you know, made a nice catch there at the goal line on the final drive, almost got it in. You know, looking for a couple of the players that stood out. Here's something, and it's going to be kind of in contradiction with my overall top takeaway, which was the defense was truly horrible yesterday. But let me just give you one little nugget about the defense yesterday. The defense on first down, especially in the first half, and really only in the first half, it was pretty effective. Listen to this. So the Bucs obviously torched Washington yesterday overall, but almost all of it came on second and third down, primarily in the first half, not on first down. It's really amazing when you consider the following. The Bucs had Second down situations that went like this 9 times. They had a second and 11. They had a second and 12. They had a second and 14. They had a second and 12. They had a second and 13. They had a second and 10. They had a second and 10. They had a second and 13. They had a second and 14. Washington had Tampa 9 different times in second and 10 or longer. That tells you just how bad they were on second and third down. But they were in so many advantageous positions after first down in that game. You know, and it's just, you know, it means by extension, they did pretty well on first down. They had 6 tackles for loss on first down. You'd take that most days. They had another 4 plays of 0 yards on first down. So 10 total plays of 0 or negative yardage. I thought Daron Payne, I know I'm a big fan of Daron Payne, but I thought he was disruptive on several of those plays, allowing guys behind him to make some plays. I'll be interested to see if anybody defensively grades out well, you know, with some of the advanced groups. They were in the backfield a bunch, you know, on first down. Wagner himself had 3 TFLs, tackles for loss, to lead the team. Jamin Davis had a really good tackle for a loss as well. Look, it's hard to find things defensively that were even remotely encouraging about the game, but that would be the one thing. You know, that would be the one thing to kind of focus on the, hey, if we can, on 9 different occasions during a football game, have the team that we're playing in second and 10 or longer, we should be able to get off the field a lot more than we did yesterday. Again, and it wasn't necessarily Tampa's own undoing. It wasn't, you know, penalty driven. There were, again, 6 tackles for loss in the game and 4 other plays of 0 yards, all on first down. And again, you take it a step further, it just shows you how horrific they were on second and third down in the game, third down in particular. On the list of things that I liked, hey, they didn't turn the ball over. You know, you could say that. Jaden really didn't come close, right? I don't think. He had that fumble, which Biotish recovered. You know, technically he had 3 fumbles, none of them recovered by the defense, but one of them was a fumble as he was going out of bounds on a scramble, you know, where the ball just came out of his hands, but he was out of bounds. And the other one was the backwards pass to Brian Robinson on the first play of the game. That was counted as a fumble. The one legit fumble was him getting hit, fumbling, on a play again. Let me be clear, I thought he had Ertz. I thought he could have unloaded the ball. And there were some really good quick release throws. You know, he hit Eckler over the middle on a, you can see, I mean, he processes quickly, the ball gets out quickly. But in his first game, there were a couple of times where I thought he took off too early. And I thought on that case, when he got sacked on that play, I really thought legitimately there was an opportunity to get rid of the ball. Tressway, you know, punted. Look, the offense moved it enough where it wasn't like they were 3 and out a lot. They weren't punting a lot. He had 3 punts, averaged 46.3 yards per punt. I thought he did a good job. It just seems like we will always have Tressway on the list of things that we like, although last year fewer times than in recent years. But that does it, really, for the list of things that were positives for me. A few players on offense, certainly Jaden, and I'd give him a solid B for his first game. First down defense, especially in the first half, on a day in which the defense was truly god-awful bad. No turnovers, you know, they didn't get any. We'll talk about that on the list of things we didn't like. And the punter. When we come back, the list of things that I did not like from the game. That list is longer. And a few other observations as well. And then we'll take calls from you guys starting at 11 a.m. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I am sure some of you are wound up this morning, and I'm going to give you plenty of time next hour to weigh in. Ben Standig will join us on the show at noon. We will go around the NFL as well. This previous segment and the next one on the show are presented by T-Mobile. All of our coverage today presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch.
Week one in the books, the Commanders dropped the opener 37-20 in Tampa Bay. Jaden Daniels scored twice with his legs in his debut. He carried the ball 16 times for 88 yards. He was 17-24 through the air with 184 yards. Elsewhere in the NFL, Dak Prescott became the highest paid quarterback in NFL history on Sunday prior to the Cowboys game with the Browns, signing a 4-year, $240 million extension. Quick math for you, that pays him $60 million. Per year. He went 19-32 for 179 yards and a touchdown in the Cowboys' 33-17 win over the Browns. Also, before the games kicked off, Tyreek Hill was arrested and detained for a traffic violation prior to the Dolphins' home matchup with the Jaguars. Tyreek Hill did go on to play, had 7 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown in the Dolphins' win. Other NFL news, Kendrick Lamar announced that he's going to be performing at this year's halftime show during the Super Bowl. I, for one, cannot wait for that one. Major League Baseball, Nats fall to the Pirates 7-3 on Sunday. They're off today. They're back at home Tuesday against the Braves. And that's what's trending.
Yes. Yep. You know, I think we'll have a good talk about that, see where we're at. Let's look into what next week looks like, Chick, and go from there. I think what I have seen is talent, you know, to make sure this guy's got an incredibly strong leg. That's why, you know, the decision to go for the one, I think, at the 37, it felt good from the distance standpoint, and I thought we needed to give ourselves a spark. And so when those go the other way, kind of like we were talking about, like going for a two-point or not, and you miss them, it kind of goes. But I thought... Yeah, the kick out of bounds, you know, and the misses, it just, man, like I said, there's a lot of lessons from tonight, and Adam and I have not discussed that at all, and so we'll get into that as we get into the week. I was, you know, all part of it, you know, like there wasn't one phase that you have to really play at your best, and so tonight, missing those chances, that hurt.
Cade York, the kicker he was talking about, we've had the kicker question all throughout the summer, all throughout preseason, and in the opener, it reared its ugly head. He's on the list of things that I did not like. I'm continuing with my game take. By the way, I did not have a problem with the decision to kick a 56-yard field goal there. He's got that kind of a leg. You know, it's 16-7. You move the ball pretty well on that opening drive after missing Terry on that big first down shot on the first play of the third quarter. And, you know, I thought they did a nice job of actually creating the opportunity with the screen to McCaffrey to get into the range on third and 18 to give him a shot. Look, I mean, you could have punted it. You could have gone for a fourth and 10. But I didn't have a problem with that decision. All right, let's continue with the game take. Things that I liked, I just went through. Jaden Daniels, gave him a B grade. Thought he was solid, very solid in his first game. I thought Robinson Jr., Eckler in particular, I think that's going to be a good situation. I think it's going to be a good situation for Jaden this year. I thought Ertz showed up a little bit. As bad as the defense was, on first down, the defense was actually pretty effective. They basically allowed like 3.7 yards on first down, but there were 9 different occasions where the Bucs had second and 10 or longer. There were 6 TFLs in the game. Again, it doesn't erase the damage that Tampa did on second and primarily third down. No turnovers in the game. Tressway was solid. Those are the things I liked. Let's start with the things that I did not like. So We start with defense. You know, as I mentioned, anytime you give up seven scores on eight possessions in a football game, you're pretty much done for. You know, these are college kind of numbers. You know, that's a Big 12 kind of a thing where somebody scores on seven of eight possessions. You know, they were essentially, if you count the penalties, they converted 11 of 15 on third down. And, you know, the three non-third downs, they were in field goal range and kicked field goals, and then they punted one time in the football game. You know, the yardage wasn't like the worst you've ever seen, but they didn't need it because they only had the ball eight times. They had 392 yards and 37 points on 60 plays. Like, that's just not good. And here's the part of it that I emphasized early in the show, is that it's not like they got turnovers, which gave them super short fields, or there was a big punt return or a big kickoff return. This was the offense starting often with decent field position. You know, not every drive started inside their 15-yard line, but they just moved it methodically down the field, and they did whatever they wanted to do. Tampa's good. You know, they won a playoff game last year, and they nearly knocked off Detroit. That game was 17-17 in the fourth quarter. Baker Mayfield, off his best year, was outstanding. 24 of 30 for 289 yards, and he had one dropped. And one of the balls he missed early could have been a big play, too. Like, it could have been worse, you know, if not for some Tampa penalties and Baker missing a couple of throws early. Four touchdown passes in the game. His QBR was 86.1. His passer rating was 146.4. And as I mentioned, Godwin and Evans were targeted 14 times, had 13 catches for three touchdowns. They also ran the ball much more effectively. Washington started to wear down a little bit in the second half, but Bucky Irving, the rookie from Oregon, ran right into some run blitzes and ran right by him a couple of times in the second half. But really, it starts primarily with coverage. And coverage is, you know, tied to what happens up front and what happens on the back end. The obvious things are Emmanuel Forbes had another terrible day. I can't imagine that there's going to be any PFF number that comes out later that suggests that Emmanuel Forbes played well. It looked like he got pulled. He also had an x-ray after the game, Denton. I need an update on that. But, you know, it wasn't like Sanristil was much better. You know, especially when they were matched up against slot receivers, you know, Godwin in particular. There was confusion. It appeared, watching it on television, there was a lot of communication issues, confusion issues. You know, one of the things we heard during the offseason, during training camp, you know, when we got a lot of optimism, you know, about the progress they were making, is just how good they communicate. You know, I hear them talking, they're talking. You know, defense, basketball, football is about talking. It's about communicating. And they seemed to be confused a lot of the times. I'm going to go through just the day that was defensive absolute misery. All right, drive one, deep shot, you know, to McMillan. He's open. Mayfield misses him. I mean, he's wide open. Cleveland Farrell, hands to the face. Then third and three, McMillan versus Sanristil, I think. Again, some of these coverages, it looks like that's the guy that should have had him, but it looked like there was some confusion there. He's wide open. He dropped the ball. McMillan, the rookie from Washington, dropped it. Second drive, you know, you had 12 men on defense. You had a big play to Evans. It looked like Quan Martin may have been involved in that one. Their third drive, Mayfield to Godwin with Armstrong dropping into coverage. That doesn't seem like a good idea, but maybe it is. I don't know. We're just learning a little bit about what they're planning on doing and who the players are and what they can do. But I don't think we want Armstrong dropping into coverage against Godwin. You know, on that third drive, there was a second and 14. There was clear confusion. It looked like zone coverage. but they get a completion for a big play. And second and long, there is the second or third of what became a bit of a theme to the day as well, missed tackles. Wagner actually had a missed tackle or two. The touchdown pass to Evans, let me just say this. I thought St. Juice's coverage was kind of like, was it the first game that that the Jets threw a touchdown pass over St. Juice in preseason? Like, he's there. You know, the coverage is not terrible. I think he's got to turn. I think he's got to get his hands, his head around, his hands up. It's a perfect throw and a perfect catch, you know, to Evans. That was their first touchdown to make it 13-0. Tampa's fourth drive, there's a third and two quick game throw to Godwin. That's Forbes again. There's a third and three where they have to take a timeout defensively pre-snap. They look confused. Mayfield hit Godwin again against Forbes on a slant on third and three. There's a third. They finally take Forbes out of the game. I don't know if it was because of injury or because he was just getting torched at the end of the first half. But then, you know, the rookie, Sanders, still in his first game, he's a rookie. He struggled against Godwin. A lot of people are going to struggle against Godwin. But there's a third and six, you know, where you know, he throws to Godwin. Sanders still's covering him. Third and eight, there's a pressure where, you know, Mayfield escapes and, you know, Fowler missed him and he goes to Evans, which gets him into field goal range. I mean, that's the first half. I mean, you had the Forbes defensive pass interference face mask, two penalties on one play. Then he comes out and Sanders stills on Godwin, Godwin on the touchdown throw. You know, there was another, the fourth quarter touchdown to, hold on, let me just pull up the fourth quarter touchdown that made it to 30-14. That was the one to McMillan. There was confusion on coverage clearly there. They flooded what may have been zone. The more research on that, there just was coverage issues throughout the day and confusion in coverage all day long. You know, on that throwback screen to White where the replay came in and overturned the Graham Barton being downfield. I didn't know they could do that this year, but obviously they can. I think they got it right on that play. Then they started to run the ball. You know, they Bucky Irving, they ran right into some run blitzes early downs. The third and 17 bubble screen to Godwin in the second half late in the game. That's kind of embarrassing. Look, it was hot. It was humid. They were trying to rotate players. And after, you know, a long day of just being emasculated on play after play, they completely ran out of gas at the end. It was number one, you know, defense and specifically coverage. I actually didn't think at times the pass rush was that bad. But you know, it was kind of a theme the last couple of years. It's like, God, they're close, they're almost there, but they don't finish. You know, they had Mayfield a couple of times and didn't get him down. He got sacked once. I thought he could have been sacked three times total in the game. I thought he did an excellent job, though, of extending and either inside the pocket or out of it. I thought he played at an elite level, the quarterback did yesterday, Baker Mayfield. But again, a lot of it was the opponent and the opponent's confusion. And it just looked like the opponent was not, Washington was not ready for yesterday. Just a disastrous day. You know, there's a stat called passes defended. It's a traditional stat. And usually, you know, in a game where you play okay and even badly, you'll see four or five, you know, pass defenses during a game. Washington had one the entire day. One. It was St. Juice. That was it. That's not good. I mean, 30 pass attempts, one pass defense statistically on the day. It was a disaster on defense. It was a disaster in coverage. All right, we're up against a hard break. I'm going to finish the things that I didn't like list. We'll get to a few other observations and then your calls, I promise. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.